Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show, we're going to hear a little bit of history concerning a case that happened in Paraguay some years ago regards to a child born with Down syndrome. This follows the tone of some of the stories shared by Disability Rights International recently. Cam Wells here with
Angelica Gunther Correa.
She mentioned recently following a story of encouragement of infanticide in Kenya, a similar case that I think the public should be aware of. So what can you tell me about that?
Well, my father grew up in a Mennonite colony in Paraguay. And so this was a group that actually left Canada in the 1920s for Paraguay because they wanted to continue to teach in their language, which was German. So they left when the government said, okay, everyone needs to have English in the school system. So they were in Paraguay. They had to start from scratch. They really were pioneers. And my grandparents had a very hard life. Everyone did. I mean, everyone had farms and you know, they were very dependent on the weather. Life was hard. They had 11 kids. That was normal. So they had to make everything from scratch, right? Their clothes, their flour, their everything. And so my grandmother had a daughter. Well, I should say my grandparents had a daughter who had Down syndrome. And this was their third child. And when she took her daughter to the doctor, he basically said, you know what, just don't worry about it. Like, just let her basically die. Don't bother with her. And my grandmother was so horrified because this is her daughter and she loves her. She was so horrified that she never took her to the doctor again. And she overprotected her entire life. She stayed at her side, you know, and she was so scared of allowing other people to interact with her because she wanted to protect her. This was her beautiful, loved daughter. And she really didn't ever get over that.
That's the thing, though. Someone with Down syndrome can live a relatively productive life. They can
Yes.
hold a job. They can
Yes.
interact socially. It's been proven over and over again. Parents' love has to be part of the equation.
Yes. And, you know, after my grandmother passed away, my grandfather opted to put my aunt in one of these care homes that they had since built, and it was a fairly new thing when my grandmother passed away, so they didn't have that before. And my aunt had such a wonderful, wonderful time. She made friends. She had her own room. They went on walks. They had crafts. They were involved in the community, and she had such a wonderful, you know, last few years of her life in that home. And I'm so glad she got to experience that because they really empowered people from that community, you know, and I'm so glad they started those projects later on once they had established themselves there in the towns and stuff.
So, you mentioned this was a new concept.
Yes, it was.
Do you know anything about how the community might have responded to the idea that, okay, this is what we're comfortable with, but we're going to branch out to create inclusive opportunities?
I think once the colony started opening up, they really started to see how the rest of the world was functioning, like what new ventures were happening in the rest of the world. And I think that really affected them. So there were some brave pioneers who, you know, said, look, everyone deserves respect. Everyone deserves to be treated, you know, equally and to have opportunity like this. And everyone deserves love and all of this. And they really started these homes and they're amazing. And I'm so glad for that, you know. And also they started branching out into the rest of the community. And in the capital, in Asunción, in Paraguay, they have, like the Mennonites there, have done amazing work revamping the whole system for people with mental illness and really bringing a lot of love and respect into that, too. So
you mentioned your aunt had some amazing moments when she was in the facility.
Yes.
Is there anyone that stands out for you?
You know what? It really what affected me when I saw her was seeing her holding hands with friends and just having those relationships, because she'd never had that. She'd always had good relationships with her siblings and parents, and like they always joked around and they had a good time together, but having those friends, I think for her was a life changer, and she was so happy. She never stopped smiling.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for inclusion and respect for everyone, what would you say?
Well, everyone deserves that love and friendship and respect, really. It's like we're all human beings, and we all have that right to happiness and love and yeah, friendship. It's a beautiful thing.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you. Thank you, Ken.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Neil Parker. Will be telling us a little bit about chromosome 18. So tell me a little bit about chromosome 18.
So chromosome 18 was founded 27 years ago when the president and founder, Jeanine Cody, had a daughter born with chromosome 18 abnormalities called Elizabeth. Is that she was given a very dire diagnosis with the doctors saying is that Elizabeth would have very little quality of life, and the doctors actually said she would remain in a frog-like position. Dr. Cody, at that time Mrs. Cody, was a very determined lady, and she did not like what she was hearing from the doctors. So she actually went back to medical school, got her PhD, and she started the two different aspects, actually, to our organization. We have the Chromosome 18 Clinical Research Center, which has been going for 27 years, which is actually one of the only research centers in the world that focuses on Chromosome 18 conditions. And then there was a advocacy organization on the other side of things, which is the Chromosome 18 Registry and Research Society. And what we do is that we reached out, we bring families together, we kind of make available as much information as we can, have support groups, and are really there kind of to bring the families together. So kind of very two distinct aspects to our organization. And both as they have now been established for 27 years.
Now, when you mention that one aspect reaches out to families, how do you go about that?
Well, when we first started, it was literally sending out kind of mailings. And initially, because chromosome 18 is a rare disease, is that there was very, very little contact between the families. So when Dr. Cody started off, there was only, I believe, five families that were kind of just sending letters to each other. Of course, over the years, as we've progressed, is that A lot of information comes out by email and on social media. So some of the biggest aspects that we see from our families are, number one is kind of sharing things on a dedicated Facebook page, which only family members are allowed to access. So there's kind of a lot of kind of conditions that people might discuss with other family members. So, for example, you know, whether it's things like potty training or kind of ear aches or things like that, they can kind of get a peer group perspective on what other families have gone through. And then, of course, we also have what we call our regional coordinators and syndrome coordinators, that kind of are families that have, you know, been dealing with the condition for quite a long time, so they can kind of bring a little bit more of a longevity of their experience to all some of the newer families as well. We also do have our newsletter, which goes out actually twice a month. One of them is particularly related to the kind of condition side of things, which is provided by the research center, and then we have a second newsletter that goes out, which is much more about regional activities that are going on, and how people can kind of get involved in different ways.
So, in your time with the organization, what's been the greatest success moment?
I think, from my perspective, I've been with the organization for two and a half years now. Is that I think one of the biggest successes that we had was actually the celebration of our 25th anniversary at UT Health in San Antonio. We actually had a very meaningful celebration that Dr. Henrich, who is the dean of the whole university, kind of recognized the importance of number one, the longevity of all the research that we've been doing, because, you know, many clinical studies are just for 2-3 years. But, you know, to have a study that has been going on for 27 years where we can monitor kind of families as they've progressed through different ages is a unique situation. So I think from the 25th anniversary was kind of highlighting the success of everything that has been achieved from, for improving the lives of families.
So if you could send any one message about the need for awareness and ongoing research, what would you say?
The one message that I would like to send out is just raising awareness not only about kind of chromosome 18, but also other rare diseases as well. Is that, you know, as probably a lot of your listeners know, is that up to 10% of the U.S. population is dealing with some sort of rare disease, and as a community, we try and raise awareness every day about chromosome 18 and what that means for our families. But on the bigger picture, I think kind of it's important for people to realize that it does affect a lot of people, over 30 million kind of people in the U.S. And I think that is that is a voice that needs to be heard a little bit louder.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Was that what you were looking for?
Absolutely. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The SafeLancer app is an essential tool to your safety at the University of Windsor. The app will alert you to any emergency situations on campus and provide instant access to campus security resources. You can access a virtual walk home, allowing campus police or even a friend to follow you online to your destination. Chat with a campus police dispatch directly via the app, make reports of suspicious activity, and access on and off campus support services. You can also check the crime map to see campus and Windsor police reported crimes in the area. Be a Safe Lancer on the UN campus and download the Safe Lancer app, available for Apple and Android devices.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about chromosome 18 deletions in the case of someone born with Down syndrome who could have been on the receiving end of infanticide. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Christine McDonald from Connect 22 Families. So tell me a little bit about your work with Connect 22 Families.
So we are a parent group. I guess 22q deletion syndrome is a medical condition that's linked to a deletion on the 22nd chromosome, and it can result in up to 180 different health problems. So many kids won't obviously have all of them, but they'll have some combination of them. And it affects nearly every organ and system in the body. So it can have a lot of different impacts, and some of the symptoms can counteract each other, or some of them can create complications with each other. The major areas include heart defects, immune system deficiencies, learning disabilities, and mental health disorders. And it occurs in about 1 in 2,000 children. So we're a group of parents who have children with the syndrome, and the group consists of people who have children, you know, even infants, newborns, all the way up to sort of young adults with the syndrome. And the event was sort of a pilot project that the 22q deletion syndrome clinic at SickKids was trying to pilot, to try to get families together for a little bit of education, but also a lot of connecting and meeting with other families going through similar things. So my role on the committee, we're not even a formal not-for-profit, but just on the committee, is the co-chair, and we organize this annual conference that allows families to come together and connect.
So in terms of detecting this deletion, is there a proven method? Is there a way you can be certain about it?
Yes, so they do, they will do genetic testing when there's a indicator that there's potentially this deletion. And I think over time, medical hospitals are starting to understand what those symptoms might look like and going to that as a potential reason for the symptoms. So they would do full genetic testing to confirm that there's a deletion.
So in terms of the connection, getting the word out about this deletion, are there any challenges in that?
Sure. There's always, you know, there's a number of different organizations, and I think that we do a really good job collaborating and making sure that we're sharing information with each of our sort of memberships, I guess you would call it. But there's always competing demands, especially for funding. Because we are a parent-run group, funding can be a tricky thing for us to apply for because we're not a not-for-profit. We have been very fortunate that in the last couple of years we've been able to apply for a community conference grant through SickKids Foundation, which has been a huge support of our event for 3 years. But they require, after 3 years, they require you to take a 24-month delay in reapplying to allow other organizations to have a chance for that grant. So this was our first year where we had to kind of find different ways to raise funds for our event, because it's really important for us that the event be affordable for families to be able to come. We want to make sure that's not a barrier to allowing people to connect.
So to look at the converse side of things, with events like the conference and connecting with families of those affected, is there any success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the nice thing to see over the years is being able to see the numbers grow. So, you know, kind of the reputation of the event has sort of spread. And as well as new people coming, there's a lot of returning people who really value that opportunity to share with other people and collaborate with other people, as well as educate themselves. So, you know, we always have a mixture of a expert speaker, I guess, in the area of 22Q, as well as just opportunities to sort of share what worked for their family, and maybe another family can take that and try it within their own household. So the growth of the group is great, but also the consistency of the group has been really great to see as well.
So if you could see anything added to what's available, what would it be?
To our event, I think ideally we would have more time. We have traditionally tried to do a day and a half event, just because it is 100% volunteer run, including childcare for people to be able to attend. You know, there is a limit to our resources, and so ideally you would be able to have more time to provide more information, but you have to balance that with resources available as well.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why awareness of this condition is essential, what would you say?
I think for me, it's removing the stigmatism from any disability is really just, you know, super important to make sure that people accept people for who they are with their strengths and their challenges, and, you know, ensure that you're not defined by whatever the disability might be as well, that, you know, that is one piece of you, but there's lots of other pieces that make up the person.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Gabrielle Nadeau and Bonnie Royster from the Cornelia DeLange Syndrome Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the association.
The CDLS Foundation?
Yes.
We are a family support organization, and we mainly exist that once people find out their child has CDLS, to really just help them navigate their life from that moment on. And Lynn, who is here with us today, she has been doing this for over 20 years and has many years of experience of doing just that, supporting parents once they find out the diagnosis.
So what does the diagnosis mean to someone affected? How does it typically affect a person?
CDLS is a genetic birth defect. But not all children get diagnosed at birth, so it can be at any point in their lifespan. The difficult thing with CDLS is there's really a wide range of affectations, so although they can resemble one another, they really can have very different manifestations, so it can be difficult to diagnose. And the additional difficulty can be to, you know, to make sure that all the areas that they're affected medically, developmentally, with communication, with some behavior, some cognition. So it's really difficult to make sure that they have all the services that they need to support them in all those affected areas.
So what are some of the challenges faced by the foundation?
By us as a foundation, I would say probably the biggest thing is just making sure we have the proper funding so we can keep doing what we do. Most of our funding comes from the parents who we help, but of course not everybody is Bill Gates, so, you know, the funding that we get, we have to make it work. But most of the time we see now we're serving about 2,800 people, but there's about 20,000 who actually have the disorder, so we're not reaching as many as we could reach.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the foundation, is there any success story that you'd like to highlight?
I know one of the most exciting changes for me, I'm the family service coordinator, there are three of us here at the office, that up until 2004, there were no genes identified as the cause as having when there's a change in one of those genes as causing CDLS. So, so many times families were told that their child had CDLS, and of course the first question every family would ask is, what did I do to, you know, cause this in my child? So that was really encouraging. The first gene being identified in 2004, and through the dedication of many, many researchers, there are now seven different genes that, if there's changes in any of those genes, can cause CDLS. So I think that doesn't necessarily change, you know, how the children do, but I think there's some great comfort to parents to know that it was not something that they did, that it was, you know, it was a genetic mutation that happened after conception. And I think that just relieves some pressure that although we told them they didn't cause it, there's some scientific evidence there. And, you know, the more information that we continue to learn, the better the health is of the individuals and their longevity. And, you know, we're just better able to have their needs met medically and developmentally with that information.
And I really appreciate Lynn's response. She's right. I mean, it's just such a wonderful feeling to know it's nothing you did. And that's very comforting to parents. And, you know, I would also add to what she's saying is the idea that there's an entire community built up around the parent. Isolation is a huge issue when you have a rare genetic disorder. And the fact that the foundation has been the center of a universe for many people, because we have clinicians, we have researchers, and importantly, the families have each other. So that is a direct result of the foundation.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the foundation's work and why it matters, what would you say?
I think I would echo similarly what I just stated, just that entire idea that even though there's not a cure for CDLS, there is a cure for the isolation, and that is certainly what the foundation has been very good at.
We see ourselves as extension of the family, their, you know, family of origin, that it's not a family that someone perhaps, you know, wanted to be part of or didn't know that we were there. But once they're there, we do try to embrace them to say, this is a community, this is a family, we're here to support you, you know, through all the struggles as well as celebrate all the joys, and really just try to grow that community for them.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for the foundation?
I was just going to say, we have a few projects in the queue. We, after about 8 years now, are revamping our website. We're all very excited about that because we have a chance to really think more critically about who our audience is, what their experience is when they come to the site, can they easily navigate and find what they want, and also to try to get our site to where other people might not be looking. Maybe someone has autism or some other condition that is a sort of co-condition, if that's the right word, with CDLS, and they might be on autism sites. So our thought is to make sure that when they go there, they find a way to find us, to make ourselves easy to find under using search engine optimization techniques. So website certainly is a big deal for us. You once asked what the challenges were, and really getting the word out about what CDLS is and what we do as a foundation is very important, so awareness. We also have a PBS special that we're working on to try to conquer just that. So I would say on the immediate horizon, those two things.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.